Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Hold your kitties tight. Hold your kitties tight. It is a cold night here in Wyoming. This is Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild, mountain west in the occupied states of America. And over there on the other end, we have Lucander Fien. How you doing, Lucander Fien?
I'm in Detroit. Same socialism, different day.
Has it collapsed into anarchy yet, or is it collapsing into chaos and hoping to go to anarchy?
Well, the small number of people that still vote are still pushing for chaos, but a lot of folks are pushing for the anarchy, and they're not even asking for permission to do it.
Yeah, they're just, you know, out there cleaning up the streets, and I don't mean like like some cop or something. I mean like you know, actually taking a broom and cleaning up the streets, because the city's just falling apart, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they're cutting the grass, they're rebuilding different things, they're not getting permits to do it. Reason Magazine was out, or Reason TV was out here last summer to do stories on Detroit, and my friend Katie and I got interviewed with them for one of the segments, and I didn't get a whole lot of airtime in there because Pretty Girl Trump's chubby guy with bad haircut. But yeah, it was very interesting, and maybe you should fire that into the show notes so people can have a look at it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that at length in the second hour. In the first hour, we have a very special guest. We have an interview with Nikolai, who works at bitshares.org, he's on the BitShares team. In full disclosure, I am now a small, tiny little asterisk on the bottom of the BitShares team. Nikolai is one of the movers and shakers. And y'all got really sick of me talking about Namecoin. It was all Namecoin all the time for a couple months there on my shows. And you can be glad that that's over, and it's soon going to become all BitShares all the time. How you doing there, Nikolai?
I'm doing good. How are you?
What's your last name? Can you say it?
Mushigan.
Mushigan. Yep. And are you from Russia?
No, my parents are.
How old were you? Oh, okay.
So you were born here. US.
All right, cool. We had a Russian rock band on a while back called Luna. I don't know if you know about them. Do you get a chance to listen to music?
Or I don't really follow Russian culture very much.
Coding all the time.
Uh-huh.
So tell me a little bit about, well, I know the answers to these questions, but the audience doesn't. So tell me what BitShares is.
BitShares is a collection of what we call DAXs. DAXs are decentralized autonomous companies. And that's just another way of saying it's like a blockchain that performs a service. So if you've been talking about Namecoin so far, this is actually a really good example. Namecoin lets you register names and like update their values in a distributed environment, so you can distribute keys trustlessly. So that's like a service that the blockchain performs, and the network that maintains that blockchain performs that service. And we sort of take that and more carefully design the relationship of the equity to the service that the blockchain performs, so that we can capture the income from people paying to be able to use the DAG.
And when you say we capture the income, you don't just mean like you and a couple guys in an ivory tower. You mean like everyone who's involved in the whole environment, right?
Yeah, it'd be, so it's just like a cryptocurrency that you buy on a normal exchange. So if you just buy it, and then you get income in proportion to how many shares you own.
Yeah, so if somebody buys the, what is the coin called that they buy?
So let's just call it name shares. Okay. In this case, P2P name shares.
Okay. When is that going to be released? The P2P, the dot P2P, which is going to do what .bit did, but do it right and solve a lot of the problems of Namecoin. When is that coming out?
Yeah, so we learned the hard way not to ever say dates in public, but we're shooting for this summer.
Okay, but that's not the only DAC, right? There are other DACs.
Mm-hmm.
What are they so far?
Oh, man. Okay, so the ones under development right now, there's a lottery DAC, which is sort of like a proof of concept for all sorts of games you can facilitate in a trustless environment like this. Lottery is just one of the simplest mechanics. There's a competitor to MasterCoin and to Counterparty called BitShares Me. And so the idea is individuals will like IPO themselves. They can like issue shares. They're basically like bear shares you can issue for whatever you want. But it's just like Counterparty, basically, if you know what that is.
Pretend people don't.
All it is basically you let people, it's like one blockchain and any individual can issue their own coin into that blockchain. And then they can say, okay, they can either have it be the type where they can't modify the supply afterwards, and that's enforced by the network, or they can give themselves, you know, reserve the right to change the, you know, buy back shares or issue new shares. And so this is sort of useful for traditional IPOs. So this is still useful for like centralized companies. They're not autonomous companies, but you can issue shares of them onto this blockchain that's secured in a distributed environment.
What about
trade it against other cryptocurrencies?
What about contracts? I've heard a lot of people talking about putting contracts on the blockchain.
Right. So if you have something like that, then you can. So another feature of something is like you would publish a feed out of one of your reserved things in this system. You could basically have trades that go off under certain conditions and that they depend on the values of the feed, which lets you make financial derivatives. They can also depend on the value of the market. So if your asset goes below a certain price, you have an option, you know, do normal options.
There's one for music also. What does the music one consist of?
That is sort of an extension of Me. They're going to take BitShares Me and add some stuff to it. And it's going to be a more direct way for fans to be able to invest in musicians. And so I don't know the exact model, but the idea is that you can set up some interesting incentive structures so that early listeners who identify which musicians are going to be popular can like buy shares in that musician and sort of invest in them, and then earn their dividends later from people who actually buy copies of the song, like on a traditional centralized like music store online.
Yeah, and it's not worrying to me that you don't know all the intricacies of that one part of it, because this is a very large system, and you are generally in charge of partly in charge of doing the DNS part, the namecoin type part, correct?
Yeah, I'm basically leading the DNS sub project. I've barely skimmed the white paper for the music part.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, asking somebody, you know, to use a centralized example, it's kind of like asking somebody at your city hall, you know, how the rules of Congress work. There's just too much. I mean, that's why there's a team. And how many people are on the team now? It looks like about 30 on the website.
Yeah, it really depends on what you mean by the team, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have programmers, economists, operations managers, systems engineers, accountants, people in charge overall of software development, press relations, marketing assistant, lawyers, photographers. I mean, you really, really have this delegated out in a way. I really like it. I've interacted with about 7 or 8 of the people in it, and I got to say, it's a joy to interact with these people. I'm feeling very appreciated in it. They like input. They like smart input. They don't take all the ideas I throw at them, but it's very different from other. I won't name the cryptocurrency I was involved in before, but it's really nice, and you guys really have your act together, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it.
How did you get involved with it?
I was sort of researching this concept without understanding, or like without having the terminology to describe it at the time. And actually, Namecoin was one of the Namecoin and Zerocoin were the two things that sort of triggered the search, because like, oh, okay, I understand this higher level idea now. I spent some time searching around, and Dan Larimer's, well, at the time was known as BitShares, and where the name comes from, but is now known as BitShares X, the decentralized exchange project, was by far the most interesting blockchain service that I'd encountered up to that point.
Yeah, I've been kind of critical of some of these, without really understanding them, of some of these like vast projects out there like this and like Ethereum and like, oh, MadeSafe and a bunch of others, and thought they were too far reaching until I really dug down in this one and saw how they have all the components of it covered and integrating them is covered, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
So what is how is the BitShares DNS different from Namecoin? And why is it better?
Okay, so it depends on which angle you want to approach this from.
Well, let's talk about the domain squatting, how you guys solved the domain squatting issue,
okay,
which is
a huge
problem with Namecoin, to the point where there's like 300,000 squatted domains and only about 40 websites.
Yeah, so the problem is that they have price fixing. So one time I brought this up and they pointed out like, no, like at the beginning it was 50 Namecoin and now it was decreased to like 0.2 or 0.02. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, it's still fixed at any point in time. The point is that people want to be able to profit from being able to sell domains later. Or like if they think that a domain is undervalued, they want to be able to profit from their belief or essentially make a bet on that belief. So the problem with squatting happens because the expected return on a name is really high, but you don't know which name is going to be the one that is going to be the one that you sell to make back your investment. So you buy just a ton of names, and so that's the strategy we've seen so far with Namecoin. Right? You said like 300,000 squatted domains.
Yep. We're gonna hold there for a minute and go to the free market, and then come back with more about BitShares with Nikolai after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
People always ask me, without the government, who would build the roads? Well, I think that Nikolai from the BitShares project is building the cyber roads. That sounds really cheesy and really like Web 1.0, but I really believe it's true. I think that there are people who are thinking so far outside the box that there's no box, and they're actually having to build more dimensions to put the box in, and one of them's Nikolai. So Nikolai, tell me more about how BitShares DNS is better than Namecoin. First of all, how do you deal with the squatting problem?
Right. So we had just left off with talking about why people squat in Namecoin. It's because they're speculating on the value of the namespace as a whole, sort of. So they expect, okay, at some point .bit is going to become popular, and then someone is going to be willing to pay a lot for one of the domains I own, but I don't know which one it is. You know, the good ones were already squatted by like the super squatters at the beginning. So I just buy like all the rest of the domains, you know, write a script to like dictionary attack the registration anyway.
Yeah, like every noun dot, yeah. Every noun dot bit is
mm-hmm. squatted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we want to like, that motive is not going to go away. People are still going to want to be able to speculate on the value of the namespace. And so we want to give them a mechanism to do that. And the other thing is that we also want to have price discovery for names. because even if you give them a way to speculate, if they're price fixed at something that's too low, you're still going to have people that can come in and buy names. And it doesn't completely solve the problem just to give the incentive. So the other part of this is the price discovery process, which works sort of like an auction. But the idea is that every name goes to the highest bidder, and the highest bidder always sort of is incentivized to put the highest price that they honestly think is fair. And I could explain how they're incentivized a bit later, because the auction, it's not like a standard auction. It's a little bit more complicated. But the idea is that the end result should be that the names end up in the hands of the final owners at like the true market price, and the income from that sale goes to people who hold the shares.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to bid on it, they have to put something up that can mm-hmm. that will go to other people who bid on it. So it disincentivizes people saying, oh, I can bid on it, and if I don't get it, I don't lose anything, because they actually have to put a bid in. They have to lose a bit to get mm-hmm. in the auction, right?
No, it's actually the opposite. It's like it works like this. You say the highest price that you're willing to pay from the start. You say, okay, I'm not going to pay more than like 100 name shares. You put it in. If no one outbids you, then you win the name. That's great. If someone outbids you, then you get not just your bid back, but you also get a bonus for participating. A fraction of the difference between your bid and the next person's, you get to just keep.
Where does that come from?
That comes from the person who outbid you put in more than you, right? So okay. He can pay you back and pay extra. And then the rest goes to the shareholders.
Will this allow people like me with domains that are not terribly valuable, but are mm-hmm. more valuable than nothing, than a random bunch of characters, to get my .com in .p2p without breaking my bank?
Yeah, so it's like it's plausible that you just can make the best use of your particular name at a much lower cost than everyone else. You could say, okay, you would pay $1,000, and probably no other sane person would pay $1,000 and try to like extort it more money from you.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't deal with them, right?
And I also kind of feel that, like, you know, if like let's say Freedom Fiends .p2p, if somebody spent a whole bunch of money to try to get more out of it and won the auction. I would probably be happy with getting something like, you know, Fiends official .p2p or something. You know, yeah. I actually think that the value of a domain, I never really bought the idea of that a domain name is such a valuable piece of property. I think it's what's on it. And I also think that something like a daily radio show where the same people are listening all the time, it's mm-hmm. pretty easy to say, oh, and bookmark our, you know, fiends1.p2p is going to be our backup to have, you know, and they would just do it. They would do it anyway because they want to be able to get to something they like. You know, they're not going to. So I wouldn't outbid. I wouldn't break. You know, I wouldn't mortgage my house to get my domain name.
Yeah. And that squatter would just sell it right away once you did that. You'd be like, well, it's worthless now.
We'll be back after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Michael Dean keeping you up and happy late into the night. If you're up listening to this, there's something wrong with you, because normal, good Christian people aren't awake this time of night. And maybe they are. I am. I'm a good person, I think. I think everyone thinks they're a good person. So there's a thing on The Simpsons from many years ago where Homer Simpson meets a new friend named Trent Steele, and Homer changes his name to Max Power. And he's describing Trent Steele to Marge, and he says, yeah, he has a company that makes computers, or a computer that makes companies. I'm not really sure. And people involved in BitShares have a computer that makes companies. Would you say that's accurate, Nikolai?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So I think Lou had a question for you.
Yeah, I have a couple of them. A lot of this stuff is very new to me. I'm not a total Luddite, but I'm a mostly Luddite. What are the type of businesses that you're expecting to come up out of BitShares early on, or can you predict that?
Yeah, I can list about five or six different business models that we want to do over the next couple months. So there's what I'm doing. There's .p2p. Which is just the same, exactly the same as Namecoin and .bit.
But better.
Of course. There's a lottery DAC, which is just a really simple one. It's more of a proof of concept. So, and the next thing in that direction is actually building a DAC for betting on the results of information feeds. And you can incentivize, you know, honest feeds and take like 3 out of 5 feeds or something and get pretty good, pretty reliable prediction markets and the ability to make like derivative markets. And that kind of overlaps with what BitShares Me is, which is a competitor to the Mastercoin and Counterparty projects. And those let you issue your own shares or your own altcoins onto a blockchain. So both of those use Bitcoin's blockchain, but this would use BitShares Me would have one BitShares Me blockchain that everyone would issue these shares on. And this is what's most analogous to the stock exchange that you were asking about during the break. And so this is where you can have a derivative market over people's shares too, over the value of people's shares. And then you can have price feeds integrated with this. So that's one big cluster sort of. Then there's BitShares Music, which we talked about a little bit before the break, right? Yep. And then there's the most interesting one, I think, that is Daniel Larimer's baby, which is BitShares X, which what this lets you do is it's a blockchain that has a prediction market, and as a result of those predictions markets, free market operations, there is a controlled supply over BitUSD, which is just a derivative asset on the blockchain, such that its value is pegged to the value of one real US dollar. So this is interesting because right now the only way to spend dollars on a blockchain, to send dollars the same way you would send a cryptocurrency, is to use something like Counterparty or Mastercoin or Ripple, and use someone's shares that they issued that they claim represent $1 worth of value. Sort of they become like banknotes, basically. And you trade those banknotes with each other.
I'm going to do the Dr. Evil finger quotation marks and say real dollars. So yeah. Eventually this thing could have just all sorts of businesses, and it could be another version of the New York Stock Exchange, or possibly through creative destruction, take out the New York Stock Exchange, send that thing back to the scrap heap of history where it belongs.
Yeah, so you're like talking about two different things at the same time. Each of these DAX is going to have a crypto equity, which you can trade and are tradable against each other and against normal stocks. And also one of these DAX, its business model is to be an exchange for real and crypto assets.
Okay. I read in the article about the angel shares. Could you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, so that's a fundraising model for the BitShares ecosystem as a whole. It's most similar to Mastercoins, if you're familiar with that one. Basically, so all the DAX use pure proof of stake, and they're 100% pre-allocated, or pre-mined is the negative term for that. So we have to just determine their allocation at the start. And so the idea is, if we give people who are interested in this and sort of the early adopters in the community a chance to donate money and have that donation on record, and then they would be able to claim a share in all the future DAX built sort of out of this effort. So the social consensus sort of, these aren't like securities or anything, but there's no, so these aren't legal obligations of any kind, but sort of, if you don't want to be ostracized by the BitShares community and want to consider yourself a BitShares DAC and make use of all those resources, you should pre-allocate at least 10% of your shares to people who own Angel shares and 10% of your shares to people who own Proto shares. And that's sort of the incentive model for people to build all these competing businesses and encourage more and more people to start trying to build blockchain-based services.
I was wondering how that worked of, you know, a social contract of honoring those before you in the payment. And it's not really a social contract. It's more libertarian. It's ostracism. That's how it works.
Kind of. But it's also like it's a slightly better incentive model, because one of the things that defines whether a DAC will succeed or not is whether its user base advocates for it well or not. And the idea is that one of the best mailing lists of people who are likely to understand DAX and be willing to, you know, have the experience and connections and stuff to help your DAX succeed are going to be people who are right now contributing their money towards this effort.
Now, to make this clear, I think it was clear, but to make very clear, this does not go over the Bitcoin blockchain. It's new blockchains, right, for each DAC.
Each DAC, yeah, yes. Each DAC, each future DAC will have its own blockchain.
See, this is another reason I'm very interested in this, is because like 7 or 8 months ago, how long has BitShares been had a website to where people could know about it?
Ooh, I guess you could say in like October or November.
Okay, so, you know, around then or a little before, like I certainly hadn't seen it yet. A guy who's really smart told me about it, but, you know, I think there was a little bit of it wasn't ready for public, like, here's what it is, which is one of the things I'm helping with working on for the company, is getting it to where there are websites that are very clear and people can go say, here's what it is. But I actually wrote something on the Bitcoin Talk forum around that time saying, like, everybody's saying, you know, we need this blockchain or that blockchain. We need to put all this stuff on Bitcoin. And I said, no, what we need is a million blockchains. What we need is everyone has their own blockchain to do whatever they want with. And people laughed at me, like Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live, who's been in Bitcoin evangelist for 4 years and bought in early. He's like, no, Bitcoin's enough. You can do everything with it. There's enough Bitcoin to take care of all the money, you know, to be all the money for the whole world. And that's true, but it's not just money. Now, the second thing is to make clear, is this a Bitcoin killer, or does it work in conjunction with Bitcoin?
Yeah, this is absolutely not meant to replace Bitcoin.
Good.
I guess the closest thing is BitShares X, when you have stable Bit assets. You could argue that maybe a lot of people would prefer to use like BitUSD if it correctly was market pegged, which we don't know if it actually will work.
Now, but is it a name? Is it a name coin killer?
I think .ptp is a name coin killer. Yeah.
Well, you know, I dumped almost all my name coin about 2 weeks ago. I had a feeling from just having been in that pool up to my head for 3 or 4 months that it wasn't the pool to be in, and I dumped it all. I mean, I kept like I had like 700 of them. I sold them all except like 10, like enough to, you know, keep the .bit domains I have around for a few more renewal cycles and see what happens. You know, I didn't cash entirely out because I didn't know there was anything else coming down the pipe. But I'm really intrigued by BitShares DNS and the work that you guys are doing on it. So what's next for the overall team?
So right now we want to launch BitShares XT, which is the first DAC that we're going to launch that uses our new blockchain security model, because I said we were using this pure proof of stake model that Dan came up with. And our goal is to be able to have just a blockchain. All it is just shares. It doesn't have any features, so it's not actually a DAC technically. It doesn't perform any services. But why you would want these shares is because they are the liquid form of the snapshot that we took from Angel Shares and Proto Shares for the whole BitShares X family of DAX.
Okay.
So just like in the future, like for example, for .p2p, at some point we're going to take a snapshot of the state of Angel Shares and the state of Proto Shares, and those people are going to receive a large share of the initial allocation of the Nameshare DAC. So this already happened for BitShares X back in February.
So a snapshot is like a frozen moment in time showing who had what at that time?
Yep.
Okay.
And yes, and so your wallet, even if it's empty, if it had the keys that at that time owned the amount, so your wallet represents your ownership, and so you import that into the new DAC. Anyway, so this already happened for BitShares X, and it was 50-50 Angel Shares, Proto Shares. And so XT is just the liquid form of that snapshot because we're basically so late with the BitShares X working chain that we are letting people sell their snapshot, basically.
Cool. And you're using the term crypto equity. And that's more that's accurate for Bitcoin too, right? More accurate than crypto coin. Yeah, I mean, I've heard people say like, you know, is Bitcoin money or currency or an equity? And they're like, you know, the answer I've heard is like, that's like asking, you know, is a computer a typewriter or a radio? And it's, you know, it's that limiting. And I really think that the amount of things that you could do with BitShares kind of comes near the amount of things you can do with a computer. You know, it's your post office, it's your radio, it's your telephone, it's your magazine. All that. And then BitShares can monetize it or allow it to be monetized and shared.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
We'll be back.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Michael Dean, no relation to Howard Dean.
Yeah!
That filthy socialist. All right. It's the last segment here with Nikolai from BitShares dropping mad science about how we're going to change the world on the blockchain, on a bunch of blockchains. See, that's the thing. Everyone always says, oh, we're going to change the world on the blockchain. And then they say, well, you know, I don't know. The nerds will take care of it. And it's like, Nikolai is the nerds, and that's a compliment. That's a good thing. So how are the nerds going to inherit the earth, Nikolai? Actually, Lou had a question. Go ahead, Lou.
Nikolai, I really like the idea of the angel shares. What the record keeping of the blockchain does is it provides an honesty and prevents swindling, or provides better mechanisms to catch swindling than the SEC and the courts and any other government thing could do. How can people get involved with the angel shares? How can they accumulate these?
Yeah, so angel shares and the other equity of interest is proto shares, which is just a normal cryptocurrency you can buy on a cryptocurrency exchange. It's in the top 10 usually. That's proto shares. It's also listed as BitShares PTS because we have some sort of licensing conflict with some company sent us a strict letter and said not to say proto share. But the more interesting thing is angel shares, because that is where we get our funding. And The trade-off is that they're not liquid. They're not actually like a currency you can buy and trade on an exchange. But that means you usually get more for your money in terms of future shares of future DAX, like the ratio is better. And the way you get Angel shares is just by donating to a particular address, either on the Bitcoin blockchain or on the ProtoShares blockchain. So there's actually two funds.
Is there a minimum buy-in for that?
No, there's just every day there's a fixed amount of Angel shares that are split proportionally to everyone who donated on that blockchain in that day. So if you can donate absolutely any amount you want, someone who's donating a bunch should probably split their donation over several days because of how the payoffs work. It's better to dollar cost average. But basically all you do is just send your Bitcoin to an address and then keep your wallet. Your now empty wallet after you sent us all your Bitcoins is valuable because it has the private keys, which will unlock your shares in our future DAX.
What are BIPs? I have some BIPs. What are BIPs?
BIPs are a billionth of the share supply, and it's like what the unit of the count of a DAC.
Yeah.
So it's the unit of account so that it's much easier to make the dividend mechanism work. So you actually get – if you buy and sell and trade with a DAC in terms of BIPs, then it's really easy to implement paying people dividends because you just destroy the transaction fee. And that's instantly – you when you buy back stock and destroy it, that's actually paying a dividend in terms of value. But if you think of it in terms of BIPs, like shares of the shares of the whole – then you get the instant transfer of purchasing power.
You guys actually have an economist on your team, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Charles Evans. I really like his writing and what he says. He's a very smart guy.
Lou. Yeah, definitely.
Lou, yes. You have something else?
I'm just really excited by the prospect of this. I heard about this just literally this afternoon. And one of the things is nobody can – even the people on the team, nobody can fathom what the potential capabilities of this is.
It's kind of like the internet in 1995. I mean, everybody was talking about it, and it's like, where will this go? And nobody, people envision like, oh, buying and selling things over the internet, but they didn't envision Amazon or they didn't envision eBay. And I think we're at that place right now with what I'm actually calling Web 4.0. That's my name for what people are calling Bitcoin 2.0 projects. And I think this is the front runner. I've looked at all of them, and I think this is the one that can actually work.
Yep, I think so too.
All right. So you're going to go study for your last final exam at college, right? Right now?
Yep, that's in about 11 hours, yeah.
Good luck with that, and happy graduation, man, and happy entering the real world right away in a cool way.
All right,
thanks. Nikolai.
MichaelWDean.com.
Good evening, my fellow worms.
I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The stato sperimentato.
We had enough
on the
scene. The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to MichaelWDean.com for more. That's MichaelWDean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yeah. Hello. Hello, Freedom Fiends. This is your boy, Michael Dean. And Nima Vidati's not here anymore. And it takes a village to try to fill his shoes. And part of that village is Lysander Fien. I think in the front runner as the guy to fill that shoes is Lysander Fien. How are you doing, Lysander Fien?
I'm doing fine, Michael, and thank you for the kind words of confidence.
Yeah, man, I'm digging it. So we had a great interview in the first segment. We talked to Nikolai from BitShares, and Nikolai is going to be back. He's going to be back on the Freedom Fiends this Sunday, 11 p.m. for the first hour. And then a week from tonight on this show, Michael Dean After Dark, also soon to be known as the Freedom Fiends After Dark, or just Freedom Fiends, 7 days a week. We're going to have Daniel Larimer, who is the founder of BitShares. He's going to be on this show a week from tonight for an hour, and then he's going to be on the Freedom Fiends the following Sunday. So it's 2 weeks of all the BitShares you can eat, and it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, right now the show is Freedom Dean After Dark because it's in the transformation. And I want to give out, for those of you that caught the interview and are really interested and want to learn more about this, go to bitshares.org, and there will be a link in the show notes as well as the article that I read earlier today. This, I believe, is titled something like How I Became a Fan of BitShares in 917 words.
Yep, I'll put that in the show notes too. And if you go to bitshares.org/team and go all the way down to the bottom right, there's a little smiling picture of me talking on my radio show. And my official job title there is cat herder, which if you've ever tried to herd cats, you know what that's like. And I'm not trying to herd the people as cats. I'm trying to kind of herd some of the concepts to make them easier to grok and understand, because it's a lot to grok, man. It's kind of like being handed a 10,000-page book and say, all right, so what's this book about? But that's what it takes to build the roads and the flying cars, the good flying cars, and I say that in a good way, of the next generation of the interwebs and the Bitcoin 2.0, or as I call it, Web 4.0, because, okay, Web 1.0 was the web. It was like, oh, all of a sudden, if you do a bunch of work, you can use a dial-up modem and look at a few hundred websites. And then Web 2.0 was when it got to the point where you could basically talk to each other on the web, where there was social networking, where there was interactivity, where you could have a website without having a, paying money for a host or a domain or having any HTML coding ability. And then for a long time since the term Web 2.0 was coined by the guy from O'Reilly Media, Tim O'Reilly, or he publicized it. And I've written books for O'Reilly Media. They're a very forward-thinking company. They almost get most of it right, except they still think the state can stop the state. I've heard Tim O'Reilly talk about, he talked about why you got to vote for Obama because a Republican is going to censor the internet. And that's turning out to be... they all want to take your internets away and control them. And decentralized autonomous corporations are a way to not have things taken away. And I dig that. So after Web 2.0 was a term, a lot of people said things like, what's going to be Web 3.0? And a lot of things were called Web 3.0 that were not really enough of a leap forward to earn that designation. But I really think Bitcoin did. And a few people said that. And I think that the rolling out of the next one that's really the next generation is getting that much shorter. It's kind of Moore's Law to where Web 4.0, I really think, is Bitcoin 2.0 projects like BitShares. And I think BitShares is the front runner of them from my last 4 days of studying this massive amount of information and trying to grok it all and grokking enough of it to go and talking to the people on the team and interacting with them and working with them and seeing just how smoothly they're doing things. Basically, it's like they're taming the Wild West. And they're doing it with a smile and with respect for each other and with a bunch of really smart people. And that's not something I'm seeing in other places I've encountered this kind of thought. So there.
There, They're wrangling the worms.
They're wrangling the worms, yeah. Which is even harder than wrangling herding cats.
Yeah. Now, there was something that I caught towards the end of the interview, and he was talking about how he got a strongly worded letter from somebody saying, don't use this. And it made me think back to the Sunday afternoon show last week of the about IP. And a lot of people are under the impression that, but without intellectual property and patents and copyrights, nobody will innovate anything. And if you look at the history of the net and really a lot of the computer innovation has happened outside of intellectual property, and IP laws are really just protectionism.
Well, when you think – absolutely. And when you think about it, not – I haven't heard many people say this, but I really think that you wouldn't have had Bitcoin – without BitTorrent. It's not really like there's no code in common, but I really think that it's kind of a leap of ideas that wouldn't have happened without it, because it's really the first truly decentralized, anybody can download it and use it. And it was mostly used for illegal activity, or not mostly, but you know, a lot of it. That's what it's known for. I mean, but that's what Bitcoin was known for too. A lot of people think, oh, that's magical internet money to buy heroin and, you know, AK-47s over the internet anonymously.
Thank God dollars have never been used for any illicit activities.
I know. Every complaint I've heard about Bitcoin is also true of, you know, U.S. Federal Reserve notes.
Have you seen the movie The Social Network?
Yeah.
There was a very interesting line in there, and there was a nice article on Mises.org about the movie, and Zuckerberg's character says, if somebody else made a chair, or if I make a really nice chair, does that mean that I owe money to everybody else that's made a chair before me?
Yeah.
And what this protectionism does, and this goes into the two different ways to make money. You can either be a market entrepreneur and you can offer goods and services, or you could be a political entrepreneur and use government regulation to cripple your competition. So basically your choices are work or robbery, the economic means or the political means. And what you have of all this different IP stuff is somebody creates something and then they say, I own this and everything that could come about from it. And it puts a prohibition on anybody else doing it, but also puts a prohibition on anybody else improving it. Last week during the show, there was a news brief and they were talking about, the Samsung and Apple IP battle. And essentially they're trading 3.2 million here, 6 million there over this whole notion of ideas. And that's money that's not going into research and development. Matter of fact, I even heard that many of these companies are spending more on IP patent trolling than they are on actual research and development.
Yeah, and companies that are actually doing a lot of research and development are spending a lot of their time fighting patent trolls. Yeah, it's all out of whack, man. You know, in that movie, The Social Network, and that's it's a movie about Facebook. It's a kind of cheesy story, but it's a great movie for what it is. It's directed by Fincher. I actually have a Fincher movie sitting on my desk here that I got legally through my subscription service for Netflix, because basically, like, Netflix has made it's made it so it's not worth the time to pirate things, because you could just get them easily by paying $17 a month. Which is an innovation answer instead of an IP answer to the problem of keeping massive conglomerates still sort of making money. But I have The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I just got that today. That's another Fincher movie. He also directed Fight Club. There's a scene in the Social Network movie that I don't know if this actually ever happened, but it is kind of indicative of this guy's role. Sean Parker, who was the founder of Napster, which was really the first kind of like file sharing thing, but it wasn't decentralized. BitTorrent took that further and made it work. But Sean Parker, who, co-founded Napster and then went to work at Facebook for a while, there's a scene in there. I mean, he's portrayed as this, like, he's played really, I love his, he's played by Justin Timberlake, who's a surprisingly good actor considering he's a fluffy, you know, soul singer. He's actually a pretty good soul singer too, but there's a scene in there where, you know, he puts down his Coke spoon and, you know, puts down the two bikini models under his arm and walks over to Zuckerberg and says, like, does it. He's leaving the bar and then comes back and says, oh, don't call it the Facebook. Get rid of the, just call it Facebook. And he walks away. And like, supposedly that was the biggest thing he did for Facebook. And it was one of the most important things that was done for Facebook was just, yeah, don't call it the Facebook, call it Facebook. That's kind of my role in the BitShares thing. That's kind of how I'm kind of seeing the cat herding. I'm doing things like that. You know, I look things over. I look over, you know, pages and pages of documentation and website descriptions and say, okay, move this up here, move that down there, take this word out, change that word. And, you know, they're doing about 40% of it and it's making it a lot better. So I dig it.
Now, didn't he sell Napster for like an obscene amount of money?
Yeah. And then Napster turned into a complete bastardization of itself and became, you know, like a fifth rate iTunes. Like it they just used the name of the former like cool like piracy company and turned it into something that was the complete opposite.
I don't see why anybody bought it when they could have just downloaded it.
On the old Napster. Well, the old Napster didn't work by then, but I think BitTorrent was coming around by then. Well, because, you know, people are afraid that if they download a song, someone's going to kick in their door with masked men and steal their house. But the thing is, for every person that won't do something because of a law like that, especially with things like file sharing, there are 10,000 people that will do it just because they're told not to. Like, literally, there are people that download and seed popular music and movies that they would never listen to or watch just because they get a kick out of doing it because they're told they can't do it. Like, literally, if you made it legal, there'd probably be less of it.
Yeah. The really big thing about IP laws is it not only does it stifle the innovation, but what it does is it protects old business models. It protects the horse and buggy whoop makers, you know, at the expense of the automobile.
Yeah, yeah.
So what really needs to happen is for bright entrepreneurial types to come up with new ways to make money instead of doing it the old way. And I think BitShares is going to do that. It's going to bring the creative destruction that the market needs. And we'll talk more about creative destruction when we come back.
Worms.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, the invigorating alternative to those other late night shows.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
On the air right now. Yeah, this is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends After Dark. So I was listening to my favorite radio show today, Free Talk Live. You've heard Free Talk Live, right, Lou?
Yes, I have, but my favorite radio show is the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, and it was before you were on it. You know, if you hang around somewhere long enough, they'll give you a job, basically. It's kind of what it is. It's, you know, what is it? There was some band. Oh, it was Van Halen when they fired their singer, although this isn't really applicable because Van Halen really was horrible by this point and the Freedom Fiends are really good. But Van Halen fired their first singer. Then they fired what's his name? The red, you know, I can't drive 55 guy.
Hagar.
Yeah. Hagar, the horrible. And then they fired him and they got a singer from a Van Halen cover band, which is kind of cool, but you're not that guy. You're not a cover guy at all. So we're talking about how the dinosaur of the state is thrashing in the tar pits And you know, there's an industry literally of just suing people, of like owning patents, patenting ideas, never developing them, and waiting for someone smart to actually develop the ideas without knowing you patented them, and then suing them. That is that's a company business model. A lot of companies do that. And you know, the things with the blockchain are really going to get around that. And people who want to see the end of the state, like Cody Wilson getting into software development with things like Dark Wallet, and Daniel Larimer, the head of BitShares, he's a straight up ANCAP. Well, I don't want to put him in a box, but he has said, I want to see the end of all government. So I'm really interested to have him on the show a week from tonight. It's going to be pretty cool. And there was something that happened today all across the country. Was the DEA raided a bunch of so-called head shops, you know, pipe shops that sell fun posters of Jimi Hendrix, or I don't know, probably someone else now, but you know, that, you know, the kind of shop, every big city has one. A lot of small towns have one, and they raided one in Keene, New Hampshire. And Mark Edge said something really cogent about it. It was basically like, you know, these guys know that their job description, the end is near, you know, that drugs are becoming decriminalized. And I don't even think that like pipes are illegal anymore, but they went in, federal government went in and raided these honest business owners and stole all their stuff and bullied them. And these people are going to have to get lawyers to try to get their stuff back, and it's going to take forever. And they basically, their job description is ruining people's lives. And they're seeing that it's not going to end. They're wearing balaclavas while they do it, because they're, I don't know if they're ashamed of what they do, but they're afraid to be known for what they do. What kind of job description is that, where you're afraid that the public knows you do your job? And, you know, Boston Tea Party said all fish wriggle when caught. And I really think that thuggery like that is on its way out, but it may get a little worse before it gets better. What do you think, Lou?
I think that the drug cops are kind of like the old horse and buggy whip makers, in that they're trying to remain relevant, and they are thrashing in the tar pit. And I really look forward to seeing hands come down on their heads and push them down further into the tar pit. But patent trolls are kind of like road pirates / traffic cops. They wait behind a billboard for somebody to come by, and then they jump out and say, gotcha, give me some money.
Yeah, I think they're more like road pirates crossed with like paper pushers, you know, because they're not even out there like putting a gun in someone's face. They push paper around and get police to threaten to put guns in people's faces.
Yeah, they're bureaucrats with clipboards in their hands and guns on their hips, and they love to point their government at people. But something is
No, they're bureaucrats with clipboards and surrounded by thugs. Like the patent trolls would never touch a gun. They would never break in and steal something from a company and kick the doors in and close the company. They rely on the government to do that. And without a government, you know, they say without the government, who would build the roads? I say without the government, who would destroy honest, hardworking, innovating individuals?
Yeah, something that's interesting with the coming end of the drug war, and I'm sorry, government goons, is coming to an end, and there's not a darn thing you can do about it. With prohibition of alcohol back in the olden days, there were 10 states that nullified the Volstead Act before the federal government even did. Huh. And the FDR had campaigned on being a wet candidate, which is essentially jumping out in front of the parade and pretending to lead it. But 10 states had nullified those laws and taken them off the books and were no longer enforcing it. And the reason that they did that was because they understood that the laws were unenforceable, but there was a lot of jury nullification going on. People were not being convicted of these alcohol things.
Which of his 4 terms as president did he run as a wet guy?
That was the first one.
We'll be back with more Nuremberg trials for drug warriors on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed.
but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Michael Dean after dark.
Nom, nom, nom.
Freedom Dean in the dark. Michael's eating deep fried crickets right now and crickets. Answering his fan mail.
Go, Lou, before, go.
Before we went to break, we were talking about the coming end of the drug war and the unemployment of the goons with guns and bureaucrats with clipboards.
Nuremberg
trials. Something that's really interesting and basically, what we have is a situation of a guerrilla gardening tactic. And I spoke a little bit about the nullification at jury trial of the alcohol laws during Prohibition. And we're seeing that quite a bit with the drug laws. Most famous would be the Weed Man of New Jersey. But there was a activity that was planned around 420. And I can't remember the name of the activist group, but their idea was to go out and plant marijuana all over the darn place. Now, me personally, I would not recommend planting marijuana on somebody else's private property, because if they get raided by the goons, you know, then you've violated the zero aggression principle, and they're going to be in a world of hurt for it, because, you know, let's keep it real. The goons will come in there with the guns and the balaclavas, and they'll look like the Michigan State Police emergency stormtrooper team. But anyway, just imagine this, though. Imagine planting marijuana in, like, city and county parks and, you know, the unknown property that they call government property. And just imagine planting that stuff all over the darn place. There are only a certain number of resources that can go in to fighting the drug war. And you have to look at the priorities, and most likely the cops are going to be busy trying to eradicate the drugs off of the so-called government property.
You know, that was recommended as a strategy in the book from the 60s, Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman. He recommended planting pot on public property and on private property owned by policemen. That's what they said in the 60s.
Okay, I knew that it was an old time plan, but this was coming about this year. There was a little Facebook group invite to the event and all this sort of stuff, and I think it's a really good idea. Just get so much of that out there that they just have to surrender.
I don't think anyone should ever break any laws ever.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yes, be a good citizen, obey, and, you know, eat your vegetables. Those aren't vegetables. Those are deep fried crickets.
They are, man. They're great.
But what this really does is it's a way to destroy the drug war. And it's not begging your politicians for freedom. It's taking your freedom. And it's just creative destruction. And I go to the Wikipedia where it talks about creative destruction, because I wanted to get into this a little bit. Creative destruction describes a process of industrial mutation that incessantly revolutionizes the economic structure from within, incessantly destroying the old one, incessantly creating a new one. Now, this was originally a Marxian idea, and for them it was bad. Yeah. Yeah, Karl Marx, the original Marxist. But anyway, they thought that it was just horrible that the automobile was taking the job of the horse and buggy whip makers. But when you look at what creative destruction has brought, you had the records, you had the reel-to-reel, then you had the 8-track, then you had the regular cassette, then you had the CD, and now you have the MP3. Now, who's rushing to go out and get 8-track players again? So what is actually
I'll
done
I'll
is
bet they're cheap, if you can find them.
Well, you probably have to go to the Smithsonian or something like that. But what the market has done is provided a better product, and is provided dirt cheap. If you look at the cost of most of these consumer electronics today, my first DVD player was $400, and that was just a single tray. It didn't have any fancy features. It wouldn't play. I think it would play CDs. but it wouldn't play picture disc or anything like that, so I couldn't look at my vacation pictures on the TV. And that was $400. With inflation, with normal inflation, that thing should be over $600 now. You can't even buy one of those things anymore because it's so obsolete. What was it? I think I was in Wally World not too long ago, and they had DVD players with the little screen that pops up, like a little mini laptop, and those were like $100. So
I bought a cassette player for $5 recently.
Really?
Yeah, the only reason I bought it was because my sister sent me a tape that had been in my mother's attic, and it was a tape I sent my mother when I was 18 of some music I made, and I wanted to hear it. So I went to Salvation Army and bought a cassette player for $5 and imported it into my computer and mastered it and then put it out as an MP3.
Well, I just saw an article recently that I think it's Sony has made a cassette tape that will hold 3,700 Blu-rays. And it looks like one of the old cassettes from the 80s.
Wow. How many Blu-rays?
3,700.
Man, why are they putting it on tape?
I have no idea.
That's interesting.
I didn't go in that deep into the article. I just saw it and I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, tape used to be used for backup in early computers before CDs and DVDs existed and before hard drives could hold a lot of space. I used to work at a law firm in San Francisco in 96 probably. And one of my duties there was running a tape backup and putting in a new tape. And it was a DAT tape, digital audio tape. And I would do that every day, and it would back up their entire network, like, 50 lawyers worth on one tape. And that's, what people produced in their day job on a computer back then was a lot smaller file size. I mean, I think these tapes held probably what two or three DVDs do now, if that.
Well, it's really amazing the storage capacity of these modern things. And it's really amazing all these people that just have this mercantilistic, protectionist, economic affirmative action idea of, no, we have to stop technology. ATMs are destroying the jobs of bank tellers. But you still have to have people fill up the ATMs. You still have to have people maintain them and repair them. And the jobs actually, one set of jobs might disappear, but it springs up somewhere else.
Yeah, people want to protect their share. People who aren't very diversified, people who the only thing that they've been trained for in their whole life is to make change in a bank.
Yep, basically.
That's square.
So, or to go out and arrest people for possessing agriculture.
Yeah, remember that meme I made that was a cop shimmying down from a helicopter in a balaclava to like steal a bunch of marijuana plants? Actually, I think he had them in one arm and was going back up to the helicopter, and it said, "America is so rich, the government pays men to come weed your property."
Now, you probably didn't have to Photoshop that at all, did you?
No, I Photoshopped the text on the bottom of it, and it's like, I was just thinking, or somebody said to me, like, that's what it would look like if you came here from an alien civilization and didn't understand why drugs would be illegal. You'd think, the government is paying them to weed someone's property.
Yeah, basically. Speaking of goons, the Michigan State Police.
Here's my thought. If we want to take a minarchist angle to it, when the drug war ends, instead of Nuremberg trials for the drug warriors, they'll have an option. They can either face the Nuremberg trials, or they can be re-educated and reassigned to literally go weed people's gardens. Like, for everyone that they ever busted, they have to go mow their lawn for 10 years.
After they go to the libertarian re-education camps, yes. And they have the zero aggression principle beat into them.
Yes, and they have to listen to Freedom Fiends and Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, 24/7 in excruciating volumes.
Well, Freedom Fiends by day to really torture them, and then Ben Stone at night to calm them down and let them sleep and absorb the sound wisdom.
Yeah, and we're kidding. We're not planning on doing anything like this to any government officials. But if this is shocking to anybody, we're just talking like the government. There are people in your town right now, wherever you live, wherever you're sitting around up at night, planning on how they're going to go kick in the door of someone who's not harming anyone and take their stuff and throw them in a cage. That's what they're planning right now. They're probably doing it right now somewhere in your town.
And to top it off, what you have is this militarized police force, and the Michigan State Police recently posted a picture of their 15 most recent graduates of the Emergency Response Stormtrooper School. And these are guys in camouflage fatigues. They have camo face paint.
They look like terrorists, basically.
They look like a squad of overweight Army Rangers. Or let me rephrase, former Army Rangers, because you don't see too many Army Rangers that are overweight.
You know, you just see big guys. I don't think you can be one.
No, you can't. But anyway, the Michigan State Police removed that picture off of their Facebook and their Twitter feed because there were an awful lot of negative responses calling them jackbooted thugs and talk about the police state and pointing out that that laws prohibit using the military on domestic soil. And to militarily arm these goons is just an end run about it. But anyway, they took down that picture, and you can find it on the Facebook page, Freedom Fiends Radio Show and Podcast. Go ahead, meme it, do your worst, and then throw a hashtag Michigan State Police on it.
Yeah, anybody who thinks that that kind of employment is honest employment is insane. And that is not that kind of employment of kicking in the doors of people who aren't hurting anybody. It's not backed by Austrian economics. It's backed by German economics, like circa 1943.
Yeah. And if you're one of these people that says, this is America 2014, this can't happen. Well, back what they used to say in Germany back in the 30s was, hier kann das nicht passieren. And guess what? It did.
What's that mean?
That can't happen here.
Wow. Your German sounds really good. Do you speak German?
I started out as a cook in the Army, and I wound up a German linguist.
Wow.
Go ahead. My crowning achievement was when I was able to fool native speakers in fairly moderate conversations.
Okay, can you translate this and say it in German? It's Lysander Fien, like your intro about the bunker, but windowless city. Can you say that in German?
It's been so long since I've used it. I've had to really, really, really think about it. I couldn't do it on the fly.
Or write it down and then do it. Write it down during the break and then come back and do it.
Alrighty.
Cool, man. We'll be back for the final segment of the Freedom Fiends After Dark with Lysander Fien and Michael Dean after this trip to the free market.
Meow, meow.
Meow.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm speaking directly to you. Yes, you. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Freedom Fiends.
That's us.
So get to meine Damen und Herren, herzlich willkommen zu Freedom Fiends.
Can you say that on radio?
Yes, I can. Ich bin Lysander Fien.
I am a jelly fiend.
Yes.
We actually did a whole episode on why he didn't really say, JFK didn't really say he was a jelly donut. That's a misinterpretation. It's kind of like Marie Antoinette did not actually say, let them eat cake, although she didn't care about the peasants.
Yeah. And I won't give the punchline to this on the air, but those who speak German, when JFK was in France, he had said, ich bin ein Pariser.
All right.
I'll tell you what that means after.
All right. So what's on your mind for this final segment here, Lou?
Well, let's send the kitty cats to bed purring and happy. Little review of the show so far is the nerds will inherit the earth.
Yep.
We had Nick Lycom on, and he talked about BitShares.org and how BitShares will be building the roads to the future economy. And realistically, there's absolutely no way of gauging what is possible out of all this. And not even the people involved in the project can imagine what all can come out of it.
Oh, they can imagine it. They can imagine it, and they've got some good indications of where it may go. But I think it's really accurate to say, like, who knows what the future is? And the reason I can say that is because I lived in San Francisco in the dot-com boom. It was everybody was talking about it. Everybody had a company. Everybody had a plan, and this plan looks better than those plans back then. But nobody knew where the internet was going to go. I mean, could you imagine somebody in 1997 like trying to get venture capital to pitch something like Bitcoin? They would have laughed at it and said, no, instead we're going to go fund this company that sells dog food over the internet, you know?
Well, if Facebook existed in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and early 80s, we probably wouldn't have bought into the brainwashing of the Russians are evil. Because we would have had Russian friends. And I'm sure you got the same indoctrination that I got about, oh, the evil empire.
Terrified. I was ducking and covering. I was like the last – I'm the last age of people that were forced in school to do duck and cover drills as if hiding under your desk would protect you from Russian nukes. But, it seems like governments always want an enemy. And if they don't have one, they'll make one. And they'll exaggerate it. And, you know, the way they portrayed Russians in the Cold War is exactly how a lot of people portray Middle Easterners now. They always portrayed Americans as good and decent and law-abiding and caring about the rule of law and generous and kind and responsible. And they portrayed, you know, the Russians then and the Middle Easterners now as, you know, sinister and sneaky and mean and destructive and not respecting the rule of law. And, you know, people are just people wherever you go. And there's good people everywhere and there's bad people everywhere. And I remember the first time I met someone from Russia and they were really cool. And I was like, wait, my government must have lied to me, you know.
One of many lies. Yeah, I always thought the Russians were evil until I met a few.
Yeah. The first time I realized maybe everything I'm told isn't true, I remember watching the Vietnam War on TV when I was a kid, and I didn't like the idea of it, and I didn't understand it. But I really remember when Nixon resigned and, like, was being called a crook, and I was like, Mommy, isn't the president supposed to be the most honest, bestest man in the world? My mother, who had voted for Nixon, said, it's complicated, Michael.
Yeah. But more and more, the curtain is being pulled back, and people are seeing that there's not a grand wizard. Well, maybe a grand wizard, but realistically, the person behind the curtain is just a tiny little man that is flaccid and taking Viagra to sustain himself.
Yeah, and he's going, I am the almighty state. Bow before me and give me all your money.
Yep, and he's putting his own hand on top of his head and pushing himself down into the tar pit.
Well, cool, Lusander Fiend. It's been good having you on the Freedom Fiends. Thanks for coming on once more. It's good having you on all the time.
I'll be back Saturday afternoon, and don't forget, the market will provide.
Worms. It'll provide more than worms, but yeah.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.